Let's call this meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to order. It is now 2:02 p.m. on Monday, February 13, 2017. Before we begin, I would like to thank Christy Blair, the House Judiciary Secretary, and Kelsey Goodell from the Juno LIO, who make sure we have sound and a transcript of our committee hearings. At this time, I want to remind committee members and those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today, we have Representative Kopp, Representative Eastman, Representative Reinbold, Representative Christ Tompkins, my Vice Chair Representative Fansler, and myself, Representative Klayman. Representative Ledoux is excused for the day, and we do have a quorum to do business. Our first order of business today is House Bill 8, Enforcement of Foreign Protective Orders, which is sponsored by Representative Edgeman. This is the second hearing on the bill. The sponsor has made changes to House Bill 8 and has proposed a committee substitute. Tim Clark, the staff to Representative Edgeman, is prepared to explain the changes to the committee that would be part of the committee substitute. Mr. Clark, if you could come forward, identify yourself for the record, and explain the changes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tim Clark. I'm staff to Representative Edgeman. I'm going to read this explanation of changes start to finish, because although this is a technical change, it's easy to get lost. So, during HB 8's first hearing before the committee, Representative Eastman noticed two sections of the bill that could be drafted more economically. Sections 8 and 9 of the original bill concern recognition of domestic violence-related protective orders in statutes regarding dissolution of marriage. Section 8 included that a petition for dissolution of a marriage must state whether during the marriage one spouse or the other was either the petitioner or respondent in a domestic violence-related protective order. Section 9 included that a court should give a heightened level of scrutiny to dissolution of marriage agreements if one party or the other was either the petitioner or respondent in a domestic violence-related protective order. These statutes currently single out protective orders issued in another jurisdiction, including the requirement that they be filed with an Alaska court. However, because of the amendments in the bill, or the amendments made to AS 18.66.140B, that singling out is no longer necessary. Protective orders issued in another jurisdiction, along with the fact that they needn't be filed with an Alaskan court, would now be covered in the range of statutes, that's 18.66.100 through 18.66.180, already cited in these sections, at 25.24.210E7B and at 25.24.220H2B. The committee substitute therefore simply repeals the subparagraphs that make reference to, quote, a protective order issued in another jurisdiction and filed with the court in this state under AS 18.66.140. Those subsections are specifically AS 25.24.210E7D and AS 25.24.220H2D.
And go ahead, Representative Kopp.
Just in the body of the bill, Mr. Clark, could you just show us where the repealers are?
You're looking at the committee, the proposed committee substitute?
Yeah, D, version D, right, Mr. Chairman? Version, yes.
Right, okay.
Thank you, Representative Kopp. Through the chair, in the committee substitute, that's the new section 9. I'm sorry, the new section 8, which is
okay.
A one line showing the repeals.
Thank you.
And so what is essentially the difference between the original bill and the committee substitute is that essentially sections 8 and section 9 of the original bill are deleted, and then there's sections of the statute that are removed, and the remainder of the bill remains the same.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. The bill as originally written accomplished what it was designed to accomplish, but this is certainly a more economical way of drafting it. So.
Other questions for the committee? From the committee, not for the committee, from the committee. I'll get those words right. I don't see any other. Oh, Representative Fansler, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair. So essentially what you're saying is all of this is captured in another section of code somewhere, and this is a duplicate of that code, or?
Representative Fansler, through the chair, perhaps the easiest way to illustrate it would be for you to turn to sections 8 and 9 of the original bill. And on page 5, line 18, in the original bill, it read, a protective order issued in another jurisdiction and recognized in this state under AS 1866.140. Now, if you go further up that list, Representative Fansler, through the chair, you'll see that either spouse could also have been a defendant, participant, or respondent in B, a protective order under AS 18.66.100 through AS or 18.66.180. And going back to section six of the bill that actually details the fact that a protection order from another jurisdiction no longer needs to be registered in a court of the state, that modified section, 0.140B, actually falls within the range described in B at page 15, or at in B on page 5 and line 15 in the original bill, so that D in that subsection is in fact no longer necessary. The specific area of statute identified in D now falls within the range identified in B without the without the changes described in D being necessary, or the original requirements in D without changes being necessary. So it's at its base, it's simply a matter of this being a more economical way to have drafted the bill.
Wait, hold on. Any follow-up, Representative Pans?
Yes, but maybe can I defer to...
Sure, absolutely. Representative Kopp.
So, realizing maybe more economical, but it may be, we may be missing something important here, because B talks about protective orders, and that's under the umbrella of being issued by a state court of jurisdiction. We have a unified court system in Alaska, so it's not, you know, we don't have municipal law in Anchorage. I guess they do, but other than that, we're state. But D is important because it talks about a protective order issued in another jurisdiction, and that meaning outside or not recognized. It's not within Alaska. The only jurisdiction they can be talking about is a non-Alaska court of jurisdiction. So it may not just be semantics we're talking about here. Do you understand what I'm saying, Mr. Clark?
Yep. Yes. If I may, Mr. Chairman, Representative Kopp through the chair. However, if you turn to Section 6 of the original bill. That addresses the area of statute 18.66.140B, which does in fact lie within that range described on page 5 at line 15, .100 through .180. And as amended in the original bill and in the committee substitute, section 18.66.140B does in fact specifically address the issue of protection orders issued in other jurisdictions and the fact that they no longer need to be registered in a court of the state of Alaska to be enforced.
Mm-hmm. And title, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry.
Absolutely.
Title 25, Mr. Clark, can you refresh my memory? Title 25, Chapter 24, the section of the law that is. 1866 is domestic violence, but I forget what Title 25, Chapter 24 is.
That, through the chair, Representative Kopp, that addresses statutes having to do with the dissolution of marriage.
Okay, so, Mr. Chairman, I just, without hearing from Ledge Legal, I'm concerned that because it is dealing with a separate section of law,
sure,
that we could inadvertently be doing something we don't want to do.
Well, on the bright side, Representative Kopp, we do have on the line, we have Casey Schroeder from the Department of Law. We also have Mary Lundquist from the Attorney General's office, and they will be available during the course. And we'll see how this goes. I'm certainly, to the extent there's a lot of the questions that we may have, I wouldn't have a problem if it became the desire of the committee to either take it at ease to look at this or potentially take it up again at our next meeting, because I suspect if we get most of our questions out, we won't need to spend a tremendous amount of time on it next time. I see Representative Eastman in the queue. Go ahead.
Oh, I'll defer my question till later. Thank you.
Well, don't wait too long. Representative Fanser, did you have questions, or did you want to wait till we get the Department of Law in the mix?
I'll wait as well, but I share Representative Kopp's.
Okay. And Representative Reinbold.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Basically, Mr. Clark, I just wanting to know, from the explanation of changes from your sponsor statement to the new committee substitute, you added the word foreign in there, and I don't see it anywhere in the bill draft, but I guess that just raises a little bit of a red flag for me. It makes me a little uncomfortable.
Go ahead, Mr. Clark.
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, that's just a term of art used in legal context to refer to, in this case, to refer to a protection order issued by another jurisdiction. Sometimes another jurisdiction is used, the blanket term of foreign jurisdiction is used, but it actually doesn't imply anything, particularly in the context of this bill, about a protection order coming from a court outside the boundaries of the United States.
Mr. Chairman, if we could just ensure that is absolutely the case, so there's never a broader interpretation, I would appreciate that.
Representative Reinbold, through the chair, I believe it's quite firmly ensured, in the CS, it would be section
6,
five, or 6 of the bill, where those other jurisdictions are very specifically defined, and they are court of the United States, a court of another state or territory, a United States military tribunal, or a tribal court.
And Mr. Chairman,
Representative Reinbold,
I understand what he's saying. It just raised a little bit of alarm because it was on the committee substitute and it wasn't on the sponsor statement of the original bill. That's the only reason I brought it up, but thank you.
Okay. I don't see any other questions from the committee. So what we will hang on just a second. So what I will plan to do is I will take a motion to adopt the committee substitute as our working document. Then we will actually open up the public hearing to hear from folks that want to comment on the bill, and then we will continue our discussion. So do I have – is there a proposed motion to bring the committee substitute before us? Representative Fansler.
I move that the House Judiciary Committee adopt the committee substitute to House Bill 8, version 30-LS0127D as our working document.
Are there any objections? Hearing and seeing none, the committee adopts the committee substitute to House Bill 8 as our working document. And I'd mentioned before, we actually have two people from the Department of Law. On one I think is in the room, and the other one is present. And actually, before I take their testimony, let's take the public testimony first, because the public may raise questions that we want to ask them. So let's hear from public testimony. I think in the room is Carmen Lowry from the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Ms. Lowry, are you here? Yes. You could come forward. And if you could state your name and your affiliation, and if you could limit your testimony to 2 minutes.
Thank you very much. For the record, my name is Carmen Lowry, and I am the Executive Director of the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. We are a collective agency that is comprised of 18 member programs providing shelter and emergency response services, prevention services around issues of domestic violence and sexual assault. We also have 6 affiliate members. So I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. I want to say I appreciate all of you for your service. It's a good thing. I want to say thank you for allowing me to be here and to participate in our democracy today. I appreciate that. So the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, we support this bill. And I just want to raise 4 points for you all that are already here, but I just want to reiterate. The first one is that it does bring us into compliance with the Violence Against Women Act, useful on many fronts. One, because it does bring into the state best practices, and it also may allow for us to access some other funds. I don't know about this one, but many times there are special conditions that states have to achieve in order to receive federal funds. The second one is to really say thank you and for thinking about residents in rural areas and oftentimes are victims and survivors who live in rural areas. Many times they have to go to regional hubs in order to access services. And so if they're able to get a protective order from their own tribal government that then they can bring with them, that provides them an extra level of security and protection when they arrive. The third point I want to bring up is the inclusion of recognizing protective orders from other states, particularly territories as well, that this is very important because we have a large network that extends down to coalitions in other states, and there are times when we have victims and survivors who need to flee from their own state and come back up here. Maybe they have ties up here or coming from the territories, and so we're able to facilitate that, and this allows for them to have that safety that they need once they arrive here and also while they're in transit. And then finally, I just want to
go ahead and finish your comments.
I've got one more point. Just want to say that it also shores up trust. I really appreciate that people know that that they can get a protective order, that people will respect in other jurisdictions, that they're going to be kept safe. So thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Looks like Representative Reinbold has a question for you.
Thank you. I thank you for being here. It's very impressive of what you do and the coalition that you're part of. I'm so impressed. I wish I would have shaken your hand and met you in the audience. But with that, I'm going to go on kind of an uncomfortable topic. Basically, the tribal courts are, of course, you brought out good points that they may have access to being able to get protective orders and things like that, which is great, okay? Where the concern is, on the other side, and people have brought this to me, this isn't something I've thought of on my own, but where some people are concerned is maybe it's too close. Maybe that government official knows the person who's actually committed the assault, and this person may not get to the justice they deserve because of the closeness, proximity, and the relationships within the village. So if you could just respond to that, if you have any concerns in regards to that.
Okay. Through the chair. First of all, thank you for that question, and thank you for your interest in really listening and asking me to follow up. Any time in a rural area, in a small, isolated place, you're going to find that people know people. That is a given. And it's my understanding, and I certainly will defer and get back if there's some specifics, but it's my understanding that once you can get a protective order, that then it will expire, and there's opportunities to extend it for other reasons, that the first time you get a protective order is based on the notion that someone's really needs that protection. And so as far as it limiting, if I understood correctly, limiting an alleged perpetrator or an alleged defendant their access to justice, I'm not quite sure how to answer that, but I certainly can get back to you on that.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Comments,
sure. Sure. Go ahead, Representative Kopp.
Having worked in small villages in my public safety capacity, I had a sexual assault in Naknek, where it was a prominent family, and the perpetrator was their son, and the community members convicted. And small communities are capable of effectively carrying out justice, and so I just wanted to say that.
Thank you. And thank you very much. And I, as you know, I have continued to do some volunteer work with your organization, and I appreciate your continued involvement in the community.
Thank you.
And I think I forgot to gavel in the public hearing, so I will officially open the public hearing with the gavel again if I didn't do it before. I also see on the line, I believe, no, actually, they're all in the room. Tara Burns is here with us. Go ahead, if you could let us know your name and any group you're affiliated with, and if you could limit your testimony to 2 minutes.
My name is Tara Burns. I'm with the Community United for Safety and Protection, and we are strongly in support of this bill. We all know Alaska is the rape capital, the domestic violence capital, the child abuse capital of the country, and it only makes sense to at least bring ourselves into compliance with federal law regarding these issues. Please vote yes. Thank you.
Nick, hold on. Don't leave yet. We might have questions. Any questions for Ms. Burns? Nope, no questions. Thank you very much. And then next we have Jane Andreen. If I'm pronouncing that wrong, I apologize. You could go ahead and let us know your name and any group you're affiliated with.
Hello. For the record, my name is Jane Andreen, and I'm the Interim Executive Director for the State Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. I just want to be here today to put us on record as being supportive of this bill. It aligns with what has happened at the federal level, and it ensures the greatest level of protection for victims across the country, especially as they end up here in Alaska. I think it's important to recognize that the flip is also true for people who get the restraining orders here in Alaska. However that may be, when they go out of state, their order is enforced.
Any questions for Ms. Andreen? I don't see any. Thank you very much for joining us today. And then I know on the line, first I'll see if there's anyone else either on the line or in the room that would like to testify about the bill. Hearing and seeing no one, I'm going to close the public hearing. And I believe Mary Lundquist, Mary, you on the line today?
Chair Klayman, I am on the line.
Okay, I know there are a number of questions for Department of Law, and the note I have is that you're the first person that gets to answer these questions. I think Representative Eastman had a question, if he still remembers the question. He's pointing.
I think we can go back to the earlier conversation if there were some comments that you might have in response to some of those questions from earlier.
Did you... Ms. Lundquist, were you on the phone earlier when some of the questions were coming to the bill sponsor? about the committee substitute and taking out sections 8 and 9.
Chairman Clayman, I was on the phone, and Representative Eastman, through the chair, the removal in section 8 of the title 25 paragraph regarding the petition for dissolution, I echo the comments of Tim Clark that the reference, the earlier reference in those statutes to AS 1866 100 through 180 would include the statute 1866 140, which deals with the protection orders, the VAWA protection orders. So I think the elimination of the two paragraphs in section 8 is fine.
Representative Copta, do you have it? Or actually, Representative Eastman, you were asking the questions. Any follow-up?
Thank you. That's all.
Representative Fanzler, did you have any follow-up for Ms. Lundquist?
Yes, I do. Thank you, through the chair, and forgive me for my lack of knowledge in this. It's the freshman in me showing through. So as it reads right now in our committee substitute, it would say AS 25, 24, 210 E7D and 25, 24, 220 H2D are repealed. Does that, I mean, so that essentially means we're taking them out of statute, which clearly looks like they pertain to dissolution. Is this language captured elsewhere in the statute?
Representative Fanzler, through the chair, the references in paragraph D, both paragraph D referred to in section 8 of the bill, it is referenced to the VAWA protection orders that were required to be filed under the 1866-140B as it is currently written. There was a requirement that foreign protection orders be filed before they would be enforced.
Representative Kopp.
I see Representative Kopp and Representative Eastman both look like they're ready with questions.
I guess his question is for the Department of Law and equally, I guess, for the committee to discuss. Do you see any value in, even though this may be duplicative, because this is in a separate section of law dealing with marriage and dissolution, and because we are introducing a brand new concept into the law with this bill, which we have not yet had before in Alaska, the language there makes it very clear that protective orders issued in another jurisdiction and recognized in the state must be followed. We can delete that because we say, well, we have amended the definition of what a protective order is to include other jurisdiction, but this is brand new, and I'm trying to weigh the effect of economizing words when we are also talking about an entirely different section of law outside of the domestic violence statutes now in the marriage and disillusionment. It seems to me there could be value when we're introducing a new concept into the law to restate that a protective order issued in another jurisdiction is valid. So maybe that's more of a comment, Mr. Chairman, but maybe the Department of Law has some thoughts on that.
Representative Cox, who's the chair, I think that sometimes when you duplicate, have multiple statements in a statute, the risk is that the one provision it might confuse things more than it might fix things, because someone looking at the statute might look at the two separate paragraphs and say, well, they can't mean the same thing because they're both put into the statute. Whereas here, I think that the removal of paragraph D in section 8 would, the former reference to the wildlife protection orders would just fall under the revised AS 1866-140B.
Can I try to potentially cut through some of the confusion? This, I will either succeed or it will get even worse. I'm under no delusion that this isn't risky. But if one looks, and we may want to take a brief at ease after I review this, if one looks at two different sections that are in subsection 8, or section 8 of the committee substitute, one is AS 25.24.210E7 subsection D, and the other is AS 25.24.220H2 subsection D. Those two that are repealed, the language in those two, and I pulled the statute books to see, it's actually not repealing a huge bunch of statute language that you would think you're repealing when you look at the bill sponsor's version. All we're really removing is a short paragraph that I believe is identical language in both, and that simply reads, subsection D, a protective order issued in another jurisdiction and filed with the court in this state under AS 1866-140. And so it's really just removing a very small subsection rather than changing large portions of the divorce and dissolution statute. And I think that's the place in where, at least that's when, as I'm listening to the discussion, that's, I think, where there's this concern that because there's a lot of language in Section 8 and 9 that appear in the original bill, the actual part that's being deleted is a very, very small part of both of those sections.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I totally get that. That's okay. That's not confusing to me, but go ahead.
We're not at debate yet, so I guess I'll save my comments.
Well, these are questions. Representative Eastman, do you have questions for the Attorney General?
No questions, but I do have a comment.
Okay. Any other questions? And I note that Megan Wallace, the bill drafter who drafted the CS, is also on the line. Questions either for the Attorney General or for Megan Wallace, the alleged legal staff that drafted this? Looks like Representative Fansler, go ahead.
For the chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question is to the historical reason for this. This clearly was duplicative all along, because this is referencing a protective order under AS 1866-100, this is B, excuse me, I'm reading, to 1866-180. That encompasses 1866-140. So there was some reason that this was included prior to this, and it gives me great fear to not know that reason prior to this and eliminate it without it knowing that reason. All right, can anybody speak to that reason?
Looks like Representative, is that a question that Representative Easton has, or you have a comment on it, Representative?
I'll have the same comment from
okay.
A while ago.
Any comment, any response to that, either from the Attorney General's office or from Ledge Legal?
Representative Easton, through the chair, I don't know the historical reason why subsection B was in AS 1866-140.
Representative Klayman, this is Megan Wallace from Ledge Legal. I, too, have not done the legislative history, but from a drafting perspective, subparagraph D that is being repealed in the committee substitute, it had a requirement that the foreign protective order, the protective order issued in another jurisdiction, had to be filed in the state under 1866-140 to be recognized. And now that you've amended those provisions and are stating that the protective orders are now essentially automatically recognized, to me, the necessity to specifically spell out that protective order is recognized under 1866-140 is no longer necessary, because now that we've amended that section, it would be captured above. But prior to that, it may have been necessary to point out that those protective orders in another jurisdiction had to be filed with the court first. That's the only explanation that I can offer, but again, that's qualified in the sense that I haven't gone through the legislative history to confirm that that was the initial intent of that law when it was enacted.
Follow up, if I may.
Representative Fansler.
Well, and here comes my question again, and maybe I'm just slow, but it references 1866-140, and if we're looking at that, that's Section 6, of the working draft, and what it currently says is a protective order filed in accordance with Section A of this section. So it seems to be referencing, things that were already there, and I guess I'd really like to have some knowledge of the legislative history of it for that. So perhaps Representative Eastman has that knowledge at some point that he will be able to bring forth during the debate portion of this.
Representative Eastman, did you have a comment?
Well, certainly, and I think it goes along with some of the questions that have been very appropriately asked here. So as we looked at this statute, there are two statutes we're dealing with here. One is dealing with the changes we're looking at in Section 6, and the other deals with instructions to judges who are dealing with custody situations. And previously, we had pulled out from the category of normal protective orders. We created this special category of protective orders issued in another jurisdiction, and the reason for doing so in statute was to require that they be registered here in this state. Now, I think some of the confusion is dealing with, trying to understand what this bill is actually accomplishing. And my understanding, certainly if anyone else has a different understanding, please raise it. But my understanding is this bill, the primary purpose of that is simply to remove that special requirement that protective orders issued in a foreign jurisdiction, have to have that extra step of being registered in this state. So we are now in compliance with federal law by removing that special requirement. And if this statute had been written without that, it would have looked, as we see here now. But because we had that special exemption, we created these additional paragraphs. And so now, in keeping with the purpose of the bill itself, we're returning to what the statute would have looked like without that special caveat.
All right. Any other questions for either the bill drafter or Mary Lundquist from the Department of Law? Okay. Mr. Clark, I think you wanted to make a follow-up comment, or not necessarily. Any wind-up comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe the bill drafter covered what was most on my mind by emphasizing the word, the amended section in the bill. And the confusion might be that, I think if you look at the explanation of changes provided, it does read that the dissolution statutes, the subparagraph D was a singling out of protective orders issued in other jurisdictions, including the requirement that they be filed with an Alaska court. But the crux is, however, because of the amendments the bill makes to AS 66140B, that singling out is no longer necessary. Yeah. Those protective orders are now covered in that full range, assuming the amendment made in Section 6 stands. And that, I think, is the simplest way of describing it. And I believe that the bill drafter went a long way in explaining that, too.
Any further questions from the committee of the bill sponsor? Any discussion from the committee before we take up the motion to move the bill? Representative Fansler.
First off, let me just make sure through the chair that I'm on the record here saying I'm highly, extremely supportive of this bill. It needs to be passed. I guess I have a particular fear of the committee substitute without more knowledge of background and things like that. To me, to save 17 words in two different parts of the statute could come at a loss or could have an unintended consequence. I guess I'm not. It feels like D has been duplicative all along in my mind to subsection B, which means I feel like we probably highlighted it for a reason or somebody did.
Representative.
Actually, Mr. Clark, this is not questions, I think. This is just discussion amongst the committee.
Mm-hmm. I'll continue the discussion.
Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Not trying to cut you off, but
I agree with Mr. Fansler on this. This is a great example of why the revisor's bill is so important. They wade through these tedious issues endlessly in preparing the annual work product for our review. And each session, and I know you've seen this, Mr. Chairman, they come back and there's things we missed or didn't quite get quite right. And that whole editing cycle that they go through does get into the history of why things are the way they are. And this may be, harmless error, as Megan Wallace pointed out, but I think it's good and healthy we're having this discussion, because sometimes our attempts to economize, we can do more damage than good.
Representative Eastman.
Well, I think the question that's been raised goes to the understanding of the committee and through that, the legislature of what this bill and what these statutes accomplish. And I think it's certainly within the purview and, in fact, the responsibility of this committee to understand those statutes sufficiently to be able to recommend to the body, whether these be changes. And certainly in this instance, I think it's all but guaranteed that if we did not look at the second order effects on statute of this bill being passed, that the revisor would come back to us, in a subsequent legislation and ask us to make this change in any case. But I don't think that's any reason to change law and then expect the revisor to come back and do the work for us. So in talking with each of the attorneys who have spoken or the discussion that's been raised by this, in my mind, it's certainly pretty clear what the original statute accomplished. And I am not aware of any particular discussion that would have given me any pause for these changes here. I think if we are instructing judges on how they are to deal with the level of scrutiny or with child custody issues, I think we can safely assume that they are going to be appraised of the changes to this statute. If we were talking with police officers on the street, I think there might be certainly value in spelling out these changes in statute, for example. But I think that's why the decision to repeal the statutes in Alaska Statute 25 were the ones repealed, as opposed to in Alaska Statute 18, where others other than judges might be going to look at the effects on protected orders that are changed in this bill, or even if they're not familiar with any changes, certainly if you're going to learn about protective orders, that's the natural place to start to look.
Any other discussion amongst the committee?
Take another turn.
Sure, absolutely.
Actually,
we use these
brief at ease
before you make a motion.
Can I get a brief at ease?
Sure, brief at ease. On record, while we were off record, Representative Fansler had some questions, and I think in the abundance of caution, we will not move this bill today, but we will. I expect we will take it up on Wednesday, and I anticipate Representative Fansler will follow up as necessary between now and Wednesday. So we will go ahead and adjourn for the day. But please, actually, there's no committee report to sign. We will be hearing, in addition to finishing up this, which is House Bill 8, we will also be hearing House Bill 106, Civil Legal Services Fund, on Wednesday. I actually believe that's a bill introduced by Representative Fansler. So we will not, and we will not be meeting on Friday. We will stand adjourned today at the time is now 2:52 p.m.